This is Garage Logic Podcast number 105, Feb 25, 2019. 23 below on this day in 1967 and 58 degrees in 1976.
And now, from the mayor's office, above the boathouse, on the east shore of Spoon Lake, it's Garage Logic with Rookie on production. Chris Reavers, director of social media, John Hyde in the newsroom, and occasionally Kenny from the Krabby Coffee Shop. Here is your flashlight king, fireworks commissioner, and keeper of common sense, your mayor, Joe Souchere.
Reavers, you have to tell us what you just told me off air. The odds of that happening are astronomical.
Oh, yeah. Two guys that I went to high school with were killed over the weekend. One was involved in a snowmobile accident, and the other involved in an other style of accident with a vehicle.
And he froze to death.
Yeah, and he froze to death.
Walking.
Wow. Tried walking home.
The odds of that weekend are unbelievable.
That's kind of what I thought when I started to get all the information yesterday. That, holy crap, that's unbelievable that two people in completely separate deals had accidents involving death with the weather, relating to weather.
Well, there was a story I read locally about a snowmobiler who died after hitting a beaver dam. Is that your guy?
I believe it was my guy.
Where was that? I don't remember where I saw it.
Just north of Faribault, I believe south of Millersburg.
And what about the guy who froze to death? Was it Saturday night?
Mm-hmm. I don't know all of the details of the
winds
circumstances.
The winds were howling.
They started
to howl Saturday night. They were really howling yesterday.
And it was, most of the time when we hear, stay indoors, travel's not advised, I can see it. But there are cars froze to the freeway because they can't move because of the snow, how bad it was.
You know, and you're getting away from the country's tallest buildings. Mm-hmm. Where's the savviness, I wonder?
Well, and you would think you're on a sled. For the most part, you're going to be okay because those pieces of machinery are equipped to handle those kind of conditions.
Jessica, who's the mother of Hannah, my little CI girl, She said, I was listening to your show with Mark Lamb from Pinal County, Arizona. I thought you'd be interested in knowing that Sheriff Lamb and his department is a regular on two A&E programs, Live PD and 60 Days In. It's interesting. It's an interesting thing to watch those officers deal with immigrants and the crime they bring with them. Take a look.
Live PD is a great show.
I've never heard of it.
It has Dan Abrams, who is the legal analyst from ABC News. Mm-hmm. And then they have sheriffs, and they go live across the country. And they just encounter thieves and stuff and traffic violations and gun stuff. It's really cool.
A frequent contributor, Downing, had the same thoughts I did. I finally had a chance to listen to Thursday's podcast, which was, I don't know why you chose that. You arbitrarily picked an interview with Will Steger from 2006.
Yeah, well, I'll explain why. So we have a giant bin of all these old great episodes of GL. And I finally have a machine in here now that I can play all this stuff off of. And I thought, I randomly grabbed the first one at the thing, and it happened to be the Will Steger episode you guys did in 06. Mm.
It was fascinating.
It was really, really cool.
Well, you know why it was fascinating?
I do. I know where you're going to go.
Well, nothing's changed.
It's the same garbage we keep hearing today.
Nothing's changed in 13 years. The same prognostications, the same claim we're running out of time, the same BS.
You know what else was the same? Rookie worked in a plug at a local restaurant.
I did.
Well, Downing also notes nothing's changed in the world or on the show.
Yeah, Johnny had a little news, including great sound bites and things like that. Angie was on that show. And the Skoogman was doing traffic.
Skooger?
Oh, Skoogman.
Yeah.
Wow. Based on the hysteria in the news in 2006, global warming and the doomsday clock, Downing notes, it's surprising that we are still here in 2019. I love Will. He's a decent sort, but he's just so full of BS. it's just incredible. And nothing changed.
No,
not
a thing.
Single thing has changed in the 13 years. And he was kind enough to call us. He was driving around in his car.
Mm-hmm. I remember that.
And I remember his car was portrayed in the Minneapolis paper as being a little under the weather and missing a hubcap. And I was saying, you know, that just almost fits the template, you know, because he wants to express some disdain for the automobile. So, and I thought you'd be doing more for the environment by maintaining the automobile.
Right, right.
And to Will's credit, we brought that up, and he said, "No, no, I maintain it. I maintain it." Mm-hmm. So it wasn't it wasn't a disdain.
And it almost, at least, because that was the first time I had heard the entire thing. It struck me that you were almost taking umbrage with the writer as much as what Will.
Yeah,
because they didn't really do their job.
I have no Oscar commentary whatsoever. Those people quite seriously do not interest me. As the years have gone by, I've parted ways with that mob of lemmings. And so the only thing I do know is what Sanibel Jim sent me, and he sent me a picture of a guy in a velvet gown.
See that.
Yeah. Billy Porter, whoever that is.
And later on during the broadcast, he took off the dress to reveal some type of jumpsuit or that was underneath it.
Well, he believes in gender fluidity. So, good luck to him.
So there is that.
It was on in my home, and I only monitored.
Well, it was on in my home, but I didn't watch it.
I watched to see if anyone was going to crack a Smollett joke. Mm-hmm. But there was no host, but nobody did.
There was a tweet from Dave Ryan, who does the morning show, and he had a very good point about the Oscars and their $100,000 gift bags. Yeah. And then they preach to all of us about the poor, the homeless, and the
they're a mob of hypocrites. They just have no time for it anymore. Say, we're fact based. And I said that I have claimed to see George Washington's teeth, that they're wood.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And Bill Stein, our buddy in Aiken, John, he's a dentist.
Yep.
And he emailed me this. Contrary to what was mentioned on Friday's show, George Washington never had a set of wooden teeth. His most famous denture was made of base plates of lead with human teeth wired in place and a spring arrangement that kept it in, but required him to keep his mouth clamped down to keep it from popping out. Paul Revere also never made him a set of dentures. I don't know why Paul Revere has come up. But the dentist that taught Paul Revere did. When Washington gave his first inaugural address, he only had one natural tooth left in his head. Poor guy, no wonder he looked like he did. Good luck and keep flossing, Bill Stein. So I thought George had wood teeth.
I did too.
I guess I did. That was always what we were taught.
Doesn't have the wooden teeth. Doesn't have the wooden teeth.
I guess a dentist would know that, though.
Artist in residence, Greg Holcomb, has noted, as anyone who has spread around the internets, that it's snowing in Russia, but it's green snow.
Green.
It's either green or black, depending where you are in the country. And he thinks that's a good place for occasional Cortex to try your Green New Deal. There's green snow falling on polluted Russian towns.
That disturbs me.
Mm-hmm. It's vivid green. Mm. It's unmistakably green. Meanwhile, back here, what did our elected worthies do yesterday? They had the... they had a snowball fight.
Yeah.
Everything else had been taken care of.
Right, right. Right. All the streets have been plowed in St. Paul. We're good to go here. Somebody was complaining about the mayor.
The mayor of St. Paul and his staff took on the mayor of Minneapolis and his staff, and they had a fun, frolicking time.
That's
it was pretty good.
They're just too cool, aren't they?
Just a minute.
They're just way too cool.
Just a minute. So I don't know how you guys do it. I had to go over to St. Paul yesterday morning, and you quite literally can't drive down certain streets because the cars are so close together. There's not room for two vehicles, let alone even one, to get through there.
Single lane traffic.
That's embarrassing.
And it's just getting worse as the snow keeps falling.
You know what? We're going to fix it.
Why? With the snowball fight? Did that fix it?
Oh, we cleared the way.
Snowball fight fixed it.
Sure. The snowball fight got me thinking. There was a piece in yesterday's Pioneer Press on Carter now in for 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the piece was supposed to be congratulatory because we learned that he has a cabinet that's the most diverse in the history of St. Paul. All right? You ready for this?
Yep.
Chief Innovation Officer, Tarek Tomes. Deputy Mayor, Jamie Tucher. Mayor, Melvin Carter. Chief Innovation Officer, Tarek Thomas Tomes makes $160,000 a year.
Whoa!
Deputy Mayor Jamie Tincher makes $154,000 a year. Mayor Melvin Carter makes $129,000 a year. Why would the deputy mayor make more than the mayor?
That's a great question. Is there a formula they use if you have been in working in politics? Or
Chief Equity Officer Tony Newborn, $127,000. Chief Resilience Officer Russ Stark, $108,000. Director of Intergovernmental Relations Naomi Zong, $108,000. Naomi Almsaged, Constituent Outreach Coordinator. Keholi Herr, Policy Director. Ikram Koliso, Outgoing Policy Associate, will be the new College Savings Account Program Manager.
Which is complete BS.
Peter Leggett, Communications Director. Noel Nix, Deputy Director of Intergovernmental Relations and Community Engagement. Joan Phillips, Executive Assistant to the Mayor. Christine Ryder, Senior Aide to the Deputy Mayor. Camille Tinnen, Vista Worker. Elizabeth Zong, Press Secretary. Daniel Yang, Policy Advisor. 16 people. 16 people. Here's the problem. This is probably true all over the country where you get to the closest to the tallest buildings.
Yep, yep.
Where is the check and balance on this?
Meaning?
He could make up another nonsensical 16 job titles and give jobs to 16 more people and have a cabinet of 32 people. So where's the check and balance?
You're telling me there's a chance then, huh?
So if the podcast doesn't work out,
we got gas lined up.
This isn't funny. This is not funny. Where is the check and balance? I'm unaware that there is one.
Do you have listed there the salaries again?
I only have this. They only listed the highest salaries.
Oh, okay. So it's not worth my time to add up then. I was going to add up if you had everybody's.
Well, this is millions. This is millions of dollars.
Yeah, I was just going to say it's got to be over.
Throw in the health and the benefits and the vacations and all this BS, but it's all made up. It's BS.
Travel expenses.
But here's my, and I'm going to get to the bottom of this. I've only begun my research. What I want to know is where is the check and balance on this? Is there a point at which the mayor is not allowed to continue to build a staff? Who gets to say no?
Right.
They're all like-minded. They're all lefties.
Hey, you want to be the information officer to diversity council?
Well, the city council, they're all of the same mind.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. Yeah,
all these people are of the same mind. Where is the built-in restraint? Where's the restraint? A fiduciary restraint. Where is it?
And who has the ability to stop another?
Right.
Yeah. Especially if the city council, like you said, is...
What did I tell you?
That's why we need that gas tax, by the way.
Right.
Take care of it.
Repair everything.
With each new mayor, the closer you get to the country's tallest buildings, you'll begin to appreciate the previous mayor. Now, it's hard to believe, but... The way we've been going, Carter will be replaced by someone even more absurd than Carter. Chris Coleman is now looking like Winston Churchill.
Go to the other side of the river. SSB, our good old pal,
Sharon Sales Belton.
Yeah. Replaced with Mayor Rybeck.
Yep.
Replaced by?
Betsy Bicycle.
Yes. And now replaced with?
Fry.
Mm-hmm. Each one... progressively more liberal.
As you look back, Belton and Rybeck are terribly normal.
Yeah. Right.
As you look back in St. Paul, Chris Coleman and Jim Scheibel and George Latimer,
Randy. What was his last name? Mayor Randy? I can see his face. His son was the ballerina guy.
Randy somebody.
Randy, oh my God.
Well, look it up,
I'm
for God's sakes. Isn't that something, though? The taxpayers need to know the answer to that question.
And you're right. Why isn't there something in place that says you only get to hire so many people?
Well,
and there's only so much money to go around here.
Well, most frighteningly, what I anticipate discovering is, no, there is no restraint mechanism.
Oh, God.
Our apologies to former Mayor Kelly.
Randy Kelly.
Randy Kelly.
I'm sorry, Randy. Yeah. They all, don't they all look like normal human beings?
Yes. Yes.
And I'll bet you anything that, you know, Randy Kelly didn't have a cabinet of 16 people with made-up jobs.
No, but his kiss of death was meeting President Bush.
Oh,
when he
shook
came
Bush's
to
hand or
right.
something.
Right. Oh, that's yeah. right.
Yeah. And then it was all over for him.
It was a firestorm.
They turned on him.
Because he shook the president's hand.
Isn't that amazing? Yes. Isn't that amazing? You know what else is amazing? Federated Insurance.
Yeah.
That's why Federated, you know what they do? They tailor the insurance program to your business or industry. And they get to know you. Their marketing reps get to know you. And that's why they can customize the insurance coverage you need. Property and casualty, life, disability, income insurance. Their marketing reps are the best. They get to know you. That's, again, that's where the customization comes in. Driving a significant part of your business, they'll talk to you about auto liability. Worried about a cyber attack, they'll talk to you about data compromise coverage. Your business is unique. You need an insurance carrier who treats it that way. Get in touch with a Federated Insurance marketing representative to see how their second-to-none service can help your business thrive, because at Federated, it's their business to protect yours.
Bush Logic 98, College of Self-Esteem, Zip, Nada, Nothing. Here's Joe Soucheray.
You know what this podcast is about?
Timing.
Pushing back.
Did
this
you
is
say
the place.
You?
This is the place you turn to push back against the absurdities of the declining American scene. I got a great email from Rick in Stillwater. I was just listening to the podcast of the call you had with Will Steger. That was a replay from last Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if I can contribute anything new to the thoroughly covered topic of climate change, but here's my 2 cents worth. My dear old granddad often told me that he believed we were put on this earth to solve problems. My own corollary to this maxim is that if a human being doesn't have a genuine problem to solve, he or she will create one. In other words, if an individual doesn't face a true challenge, from actual threats to survival to Gordian knot-type problems that engage one's mind, that person will somehow cast about in search of a crusade, a cause, a problem. The alternative is often self-destruction, as exemplified by so many people who have ruined their lives with drugs and alcohol, if not outright suicide. I believe this idea is true of groups as well as individuals. I believe it is a paradox of human life that we don't prosper, that if we don't prosper, we face no difficulty. In Gumption County, we're pushing it back against a cultural tide of people who haven't found anything useful to do with their lives and who don't face serious difficulties in life. I would venture to say that the salon is populated entirely with this variety of human being. In my humble opinion, most of your social justice warriors and your climate apocalypse types probably don't worry much about putting food on the table or making the car payment. Whether they realize it or not, I think these people inflate the significance of their various causes so that their efforts will provide greater significance. Back in 2004, Michael Crichton published a book called State of Fear. It's a lousy novel. I read it. I don't recall it being lousy. Did you read it, John?
I did not, no.
But the book contains two redeeming nuggets. One is a minor character named Hoffman who points out that after the Cold War, the media started calling every little thing a big thing, a catastrophe, a crisis, a disaster. Once the existential threat of the Cold War, a genuine problem, was gone, the press had to invent a new big problem, climate change. The other redeeming nugget of Crichton's novel is the author's note in the appendices. Here, Crichton lays out the best case I've ever seen for skepticism about man-made climate change. As I said, the novel stinks, but the book is worth a look if you haven't seen it already. Glad you made it to Podcast 100. Do I hear 200? Regards, Rick in Stillwater. I remember the book State of Fear. I don't recall it being a lousy novel, but I agree with him that it had those wonderful nuggets.
All right, I didn't read it. Surprised?
No, I'm not surprised. You know, Amy Klobuchar, and we've already stated our belief in this, that she's just encountering too many snowflakes who have to work for it. They can't stand being bossed around. They come out of the failed academy.
Which then, of course, causes listeners to
They think we're in love with her.
Right, yeah, right.
Exactly. No, and Amy, you're a hypocrite. She's over the weekend, she came out in favor of the legalization of marijuana. On the same day, there was a story that a study showed that marijuana use is lowering grades among students at the U of M.
Okay.
It's just they're all hypocrites. There's no reason. They're hypocrites. Anyway, there's a new story now about Amy. That's just
what's the latest?
Well, that she ate salad with her comb.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yes.
She ate a salad with her comb and then made an aide clean the comb. I don't know if that's true or not, but you know what it is? It's gross.
How do you stab it then?
How do you eat salad with a comb?
Like you would with a fork?
And is that proper etiquette? Don't you clean your own comb? Wouldn't you clean your own comb and not have an aide person?
The New York Times reported on a unique lunch situation that resulted in Amy Kay eating her salad with a hair comb and making an aide clean it afterward. The Democrat from Minnesota is running for 2020 Democratic presidential nomination, has gained a reputation for mistreating and demeaning staff members. This anecdote may be the strangest so far, however, from the Times. Senator Klobuchar was hungry and forkless. An aide joining her on a trip to South Carolina in 2008 had procured a salad for his boss while hauling their bags through an airport terminal. But once on board, he delivered the grim news. He had fumbled the plastic eating utensils before reaching the gate, and the crew did not have any forks on such a short flight. What happened next was typical. Ms. Klobuchar berated her aide instantly for the slip-up. What happened after was not. She pulled a comb from her bag and began eating her salad with it, according to four people familiar with the episode.
Holy fuck.
She handed the comb back to her staff member with a directive, clean it.
I'm going to make you clean this.
Klobuchar has spent some of her early presidential campaign time answering questions about various stories of her berating staff members, throwing binders in anger, and routinely contacting staff members at all hours of the night. Some reports even say Klobuchar has had trouble getting a 2020 staff together because of her reputation. To an extent, Klobuchar embraces it. I don't know. It's all anonymous, she said. I will say that I'm proud of our staff, and yes, I can be a tough boss. But that's because I have high expectations of those who work for me, and I have a high expectation for our country. Okay, but I'm drawing the line now, Colm.
Yeah.
I'm willing to believe, Amy, you got a lot of fruitcakes who work for you, and they can't stand being told what to do. But you can't eat salad with a comb. Yes, you in the back.
Is this on par, above, or below Sid eating Thousand Island dressing as soup?
It's right there. It's a tie.
It's in the same wheelhouse.
It's a tie.
Okay.
It's a tie. But the comb, I'm having a bad cartoon bubble.
Okay, first and foremost.
I see dandruff.
Oh, God, you're right. Fuck.
First, it's the availability. I don't have a comb. I don't have access to a comb.
Yeah. I got a comb.
We can tell.
You can get a comb. I can get you a comb by 3 o'clock.
Apparently you're not using it today. Wouldn't your fingers just be, if you don't have anything and you're on an airplane and you have a salad, couldn't you just...
Why don't you just do it like the bowl of shame? Why don't you just go down there like a dog and...
Yes.
Pour it up in there. But you could pick up a tomato, a crouton, pop it in your mouth, a piece of lettuce.
You know, there's a many, now that you're breaking it down, there's many ideas that occur to me. Take a subscription card from a magazine.
Sure.
And kind of funnel it into a fork-shaped deal and eat it that way.
A comb does not...
The comb's full of grease
even
and
if
dandruff.
It's new, even if it's a brand new comb,
maybe it was
I would
a new
still
comb.
Feel weird. I don't know. I eat a salad with a comb.
Well, would you put it on? Would you stab the salad with the comb or put it on the comb and do this?
What kind of comb is it?
Bigger comb?
Is it just the generic comb that Joe has in his pocket?
The 29-cent comb?
Or is it the one that has the long pick?
Maybe it's got the long pick on the end of it, and you use that to stab the pickles and stuff.
I could see that because then no follicles have
But you're eating dandruff, grease, hair,
some lice,
you know, hairspray.
Yes, bed bugs.
Oh, God.
The whole thing.
You know.
And then, clean this, damn it, and it better be shining like the top of the Chrysler building.
I don't think she sounds like that. But
that was a bad
idea.
But to say,
I don't think so.
She made the staff member clean the comb.
Well, should we do a we? Give her a we don't know that. Give the staff member a we don't know that. I'm continue to part ways with Amy every day based on her ideology. And this latest,
we don't know that.
This latest is she's on board with the legalization of marijuana. Haven't you hypocrites done your homework?
Isn't she?
It's not good for you.
Is she playing into what we thought was going to limit her at the very beginning, that she wasn't left enough for the left? lefty crowd?
Well, she's still not left enough for
but
the left.
But is that why she's trying to compensate then for that?
No, I think legalization of marijuana is a mainstream thought now. That has nothing to do with being left.
But with her thoughts on alcohol, the problems that she experienced with her father,
yeah.
You would think maybe something that's mind-altering.
No, it's more basic than that. This is the same crowd of people who demonized cigarette smoking, which they should have. They don't have the balls to ban it because they still like the tax revenue.
Right.
But this is the same crowd that demonized smoking and put bars out of business and don't allow candy cigarettes sold in an ice cream store and don't allow adults in St. Paul to buy menthol cigarettes. But now you frauds and you hypocrites, you want to legalize marijuana because you sense another revenue stream. Utter BS.
Mm-hmm. Well, we got to pay for all those jobs in the city of St. Paul.
The world was better off when you had a little dope in your jacket pocket and then you just threw it out the car window when you saw the cops. Huh? Come on.
On the weed.
A lot better off with that wacky tobacco. All right, we'll be back shortly.
What are you waiting for? This is Ricey for my friend, Mr. Money Talk, Josh Arnold. Call Josh, get a different point of view, and get your financial future in order starting today. Sound retirement planning is important, and that's what Josh does. Josh can tell you that he is dedicated to helping people like you and me realize their best potential for a comfortable retirement. With today's market volatility, it's more important than ever to work with a professional who understands your needs, a professional who understands financial markets and the options available to help you reach your goals. Call Josh for a complimentary, no-obligation consultation today at 952-925-5608, 952-925-5608. Investment advisor services offered by Josh Arnold Investment Consultant, LLC, a registered advisor for the state of Minnesota. Past performance is no guarantee of future results.
Oh, a man who. And now, a man who has never had a relationship with a tree, Joe Souchere.
Why is it turned down?
I have to, otherwise, we'll get staticky feedback.
Here's John Haidt.
Thank you, Joe. The weather, you may have noticed, was a bit nasty
yesterday. To the point where Reavers lost two of his classmates, for God's sakes.
As the winds began to subside Monday morning across southern Minnesota, two major interstate highways are still closed, I-35 and I-90. 35 shut down to traffic from Owatonna to the Iowa border. I-90 from Albert Lea east to the Wisconsin state line also remaining closed. The Department of Transportation does not have a timeline as to when the freeways would reopen. MnDOT brought in icebreakers and front-end loaders to remove snowdrifts up to 5 feet high that continued to block travel lanes on both of those roads. So
Paul Bloom with Fox 9 tweeted out a photo. There's a line of semis about a mile long that are just sitting there waiting for the freeway to reopen.
So the trouble down there was wind, John.
Yes. Piling things up.
In a situation like that, how do you handle fuel?
In what sense?
If that truck is sitting and it's idling for however many hours, might be, 8 to 10 hours.
I don't know that they are. Is that what they're doing?
If I was in a truck, I'd be running.
I guess you'd trying to stay warm, huh?
I would think, yeah. That doesn't use so much gas, though, does it?
I think you can idle for a long time. That's diesel, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. I remember the Car Talk guys doing an experiment with that, and the car ran for 3 days or something.
Oh, okay. We got a lot of guys in that business that listen to us, so we're going to get a lot of email about that. So thanks for bringing that up, Brooke.
Well, we got a listener, Pete, who left his car running at the airport for three, four days.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
Left his truck running.
Rescuers on snowmobiles and snowshoes battled 50-mile-an-hour winds on a snow-swept northern Minnesota lake near the Canadian border to rescue four stranded anglers far from shore, including one in the group who suffered severe dehydration and frostbite. The whole thing unfolded on Greenwood Lake over several hours Sunday afternoon and under perilous weather conditions that even the hardiest in the region are calling daunting. Cook County Sheriff Pat Eliason said, "We're grateful we were able to get those folks out alive and that all of our responders are going home safely tonight." Here's how everything broke down, according to the sheriff's office. The men were fishing, rode their snowmobiles more than 2 miles onto the lake, only to get stuck in deep slush. They made phone contact mid-afternoon with police in Ontario, Canada, who relayed the angler's dangerous circumstances to Cook County authorities. What the anglers couldn't figure out was exactly where they were and what location they should tell authorities to come to. Going on what they had, search and rescue personnel from several agencies were scrambled, but sheriff's deputies on snowmobiles also fell victim to the slush, reported to be more than a foot deep in some spots.
I wonder why.
How was it not froze?
Yeah. It hasn't been warm up there. I don't get it.
No, they've been getting the same cold we have.
Yeah, but remember Saturday? How slushy everything got warmer. After. And it got really slushy where I was Saturday anyway. I don't know about you guys.
Didn't get slushy where I was.
Really? It was warmer on Saturday. It was 30-something.
The sun was way up there.
Oh, yeah. Saturday was warmer. Yeah, yeah, that's right.
Deputies freed one of their snowmobiles from the slush, were joined by others on larger snowmobiles, along with responders using snowshoes. They restarted the search nearly 3 hours after the anglers put out their first distress call, and with dusk settling in, responders found the foursome. Responders medically stabilized the angler, who was had the frostbite, while being taken back roughly 2 miles to shore. Once on land, taken to a hospital on roads that had to be specially cleared of drifting snow. Authorities have yet to release the identities of those fellows.
Okay. This was Saturday?
Yeah. It was over the weekend. I'm not sure.
Is this an example of losing your relationship with nature?
Well, it was yesterday, and we knew those winds were going to be there. So.
Yeah, but on a snowmobile... you never think you're going to get stopped by slush on a snowmobile.
I would think that I might be. In other words, my relationship with nature would have had me very keenly interested in the weather forecast prior to setting out 2 miles onto a lake to go fishing.
Would you go out with 50-mile-an-hour winds, knew were coming?
No, so. maybe they're young and fearless and think they're invincible. I don't know.
Back to the guy that had the truck running at the airport, Pete, was it?
Pete Johnson.
Weren't there guys that were there that were placing bets to see when it was going to run out of gas, too?
Yeah, never
like
did.
The brick party?
Yeah. Like the brick, right? Oh, it's got 4 more hours in it.
The gun control debate, which hasn't even really started this year at the Capitol yet, is already causing some divisiveness. Governor Tim Walz releasing a statement Sunday condemning comments made by Representative Cal Barr of East Bethel during a Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus rally at the Capitol on Saturday. Walz says Barr's comments risked inciting violence. Barr said, according to a video posted on the Gun Caucus's Facebook page, there's a lot of us in this room that have had enough, and it's time to start riding herd on the rest of these people that you want to take your rights away from you. They will not go quietly into the good night. They need to be kicked to the curb and stomped on and run over a few times. Barr's a member.
That's a bit harsh.
Yeah, a little bit. Mm. Barr's a member of the new House Republican Caucus, a group that recently broke off with the House GOP Caucus. He's a small business owner serving his second term. Walz is a supporter of two proposals expected to get hearings in the House Public Safety Committee this week that involve firearms.
Where was this guy speaking?
He was speaking at a Gun Owners Caucus meeting.
Well, he was throwing red meat to the lions there, wasn't he?
Right.
Very much so. The United States is planning new ways to pressure Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro to give up power and other means to provide help to the people of the devastated South American country after a weekend effort failed to deliver aid. Vice President Mike Pence arrived in the Colombian capital and headed immediately into a meeting with Colombian President Iván Duque. Pence will also meet with members of the regional coalition and Venezuelan opposition leader Juan Guaido to discuss the next steps aimed at ousting Maduro.
What are they going to do with that?
Well, socialism is so great that Maduro had his troops fire on people trying to bring the starving people aid.
Yeah.
That is...
General Motors has stayed the execution of two of the 5 American-made car models that it was expected to discontinue this summer. The Chevrolet Impala and the Cadillac CT6 full-size sedans will instead be built through January of 2020. That'll keep the lights on at GM's last factory in its hometown, the Detroit Hamtramck assembly, for an extra 7 months. Production of the Chevrolet Volt Hybrid and Buick LaCrosse ended at the facility February 15th. Neither model will be replaced as the automaker shifts its product focus toward fully electric cars and utility vehicles. And sales of the Impala were down nearly 50% in 2018, just over 56,000 sold, while the Cadillac folks delivered 9,668 of the CT6, about the same as the prior year.
You ever drive a 79 Caprice Classic?
Nope.
That was that in the winter, rear-wheel drive.
Donk. That's a donk.
Yes, it was beautiful. That's what I I cut my teeth on driving.
Really? Yeah. 79 Caprice Classic.
Yep.
That's a big unit.
Nice vinyl seats.
Yeah.
Plush red vinyl seats.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, we got our first garage wood picture.
Yeah.
From David Bliss in Bulgaria. Attaches a picture of garage wood from my garage here in Sofia. The picture is complete with the two things every Bulgarian garage should have. An old communist-era car that is rarely used, in this case a Lada, and a pile of potatoes. Enjoy. And there's the Lada, the pile of potatoes, and his plank. He has a plank as his garage wood.
Yeah.
My garage wood is are stubby chunks. I don't have planks.
What's a Lada?
You know what you can do, Reavers? You can leave now if you want.
No,
a Lada is an old communist-era car piece of...
Junk. That's a lot of potatoes.
That is a lot of potatoes. But isn't that nice? He's got the plank.
Yes. Yeah.
So minor blocks.
We were given a really good suggestion over the weekend. I think this is a social media campaign.
Raffle?
I did attend a meat raffle yesterday, by the way.
Oh, cool. I've never attended a meat raffle.
Me really? And the folks from Twin Cities Live, they're doing a little segment. Who's got the best meat raffle in town?
Really?
So we were at... Where were we? Oh, we were in West Tonka Bay.
Okay.
At the joint
there.
That's
fabulous.
Throw down a buck.
Sure.
Spin the wheel.
Yeah.
Meat raffles are fun. Have you never been?
Never been to a meat
raffle.
Never been to a meat raffle.
Oh, they're fun.
What's the point of it? To drink?
So, basically.
Well, you win meat.
But for a dollar, you get the chance to win a nice big steak.
That's been sitting out at room temperature for
about an hour
four hours, you know?
They do. They start the meat raffle, Joe, by laying all the meat on the table. So you're about a half hour in.
I'd want to go real quick.
But these were in
I want to win quick.
Troughs of ice.
Oh,
so they were. Oh, this was a top-notch
somebody
deal.
Somebody got it. After the incident, now they put them on ice.
That's a great idea, actually.
Mm-hmm.
New England Patriots owner, speaking of meat raffles.
Whoa!
No, sorry.
Hey now.
New England Patriots owner Robert Kraft and other men accused of soliciting prostitution in a Florida massage parlor are expected to be charged by prosecutors as soon as Monday afternoon. The solicitation charges that ensnared Kraft and nearly 200 other men stem from a sweeping months-long law enforcement probe of massage parlors where defendants sought sexual services from women who were allegedly victims of an international human trafficking ring. Nine men with New England ties, including Kraft and billionaire John W. Childs, are accused of soliciting prostitution from women working at those parlors. Police in Jupiter, Florida said Kraft visited Orchids of Asia Day Spa twice between January 18th and January 22nd and solicited prostitution from female workers.
I don't get it. I just don't get it. I really don't. You know, we all have a very good friend that lives in Jupiter. I just hope it isn't him as the other big name that's revealed. Yeah,
he was one of 25 men videotaped by Jupiter police in the act of receiving sexual services, according to police. On Sunday, a spokesman for Kraft declined to comment on the case. He said, "We categorically deny that Mr. Kraft engaged in any illegal activity. Because it is a judicial matter, we will not be commenting further."
Who was the billionaire?
Some hedge fund guy.
Yeah, billionaire.
Charlie?
John Childs.
Oh, John Childs.
John W. Childs.
Yes.
You know, nobody chronicles a story like this quite like the Sports Pickle does on social media. And they had a great point, Johnny, that you might be curious in.
Yeah.
He might not be the only NFL owner. It turns out that the Green Bay Packers have thousands of owners that have also been busted for prostitution.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. It could get real interesting.
I wonder who the other big name is.
Well, I saw a list of the names. There was nobody on there I recognized. Maybe they meant Childs.
No, ESPN keeps hinting that there's a name much bigger than Kraft that hasn't been released.
But they released all 25 names.
Oh, they did.
Over the weekend.
Oh, okay.
And I saw the list, and I didn't know anybody but Kraft and this Childs.
Tiger wasn't on it, was he?
No, Tiger was not on it.
You're suggesting that
there's a Waffle House half a block away.
You're suggesting that ESPN was guilty of promoting something for web clicks?
I believe so.
What? Oh, that's shocking. Yeah.
A man driving a car with a sign warning against drunken driving was arrested Sunday. Guess why?
Drunken driving.
Driving under the influence, yes. The man wove across three lanes on Interstate 80 in Berkeley, California. Highway Patrol Officer Herman Baza told local television station KTVU it happened shortly before 4 a.m. He was well above the state blood alcohol limit of 0.08%, according to Baza. Mounted on top of the man's sedan was a sign that read, "I should probably get a ride home," and another one that read, "Buzz driving is drunk driving." National Highway Traffic Safety Administration pays drivers to put those signs on their cars, according to Baza. It's a good message, the officer told KTVU, but he's not necessarily the best role model. He was weaving all over the place. We caught him early enough that we prevented him from any crashing and causing problems.
Maybe he was just trying to show you what happens when you do that.
That's true.
This is why I have these stickers on.
Beer. I got a beer story here. If I could turn the page. Having some sticky fingers problems. There we go.
You know.
Is this I hope this isn't the story where we learn that beer might have weed killer in it.
Nope, that's not the one.
What?
So, yeah, I don't know. Traces of weed killer.
Roundup. Yeah, the story said traces of Roundup.
What kind of beer?
In every beer? Or?
I didn't read the
whole thing. I suppose wherever they grow hops. Huh?
I didn't want to be frightened by it, so I didn't read it. Yeah. I just saw the headline.
That sounds like a beer show topic. You better get into that.
I want to know.
I think you should find out.
It's all over the internet.
Yeah.
Got it.
This one also probably a beer show topic. A fight between America's two biggest brewers is jeopardizing a proposed Got Milk-style campaign intended to help struggling beer makers win back drinkers who have defected to wine and spirits. This is between Anheuser-Busch and Molson Coors Brewing Company.
Oh, God.
This is okay.
For over a year, they've discussed a potential multi-million-dollar brand-agnostic campaign aimed at improving the overall health of the beer category. But it could be dead in the water after Miller Coors, Molson's U.S. unit, pulled out of a meeting slated for next month, said the initiative should be paused after a public spat with Bud Light maker AB InBev. The rift between the two, it all started, remember the Super Bowl TV ad?
The corn syrup ads.
Apparently this made Miller Coors angry. They responded on Twitter with a full-page newspaper advertisement addressed to beer drinkers of America, defending its use of corn syrup as a part of the brewing process.
They realize how counterproductive that this argument is. What they should just do is create their own marketing campaign directly aimed back at Bud Light. They shouldn't go down this route because now they just look petty.
Why would beer have corn syrup in it?
In the process, does every beer have corn syrup? Turning with the wheat and the hops must be solidified to secure the proper taste. I'm just making that up. I don't know.
I could tell.
I was listening.
Okay. He was going Cliff
Clavin. It's like you're double ratchet.
Right. You had me for a minute.
I don't know why.
Yeah. See, so the ad campaign was that Bud Light does not have the corn syrup.
Because it's made with rice.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Bud Light is? I don't think Bud Light. Is it really?
Yes.
I did not know that. Anyway, Pete Marino, Miller Coors communications chief, called this all a waste of time and money to work on the campaign. Quote, while the dominant industry leader is spending millions of dollars demonizing the ingredients in beer. Did you know beer's been losing market share, by the way, for the last 20 years?
I did not know that.
I did.
Their sales since 1999, they used to have 56% of the market of alcohol sales.
Yep.
They now have 45.5%.
Really?
So you're not just talking mainstream
just beer.
Just beer
period.
Oh, including the craft?
But craft beer is slightly on the rise.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. Wine share is up 17.2% from 15.8%, and spirits, they're way up, almost 10%.
But John's talking about the percentage of alcohol being sold.
Correct.
It's still their number is still extremely high.
Yes.
They just don't control as much of the populace as they did.
Who would not be drinking beer? Are the young kids not drinking beer?
No. And a lot of people, especially the females, are drinking, you know, like females are now drinking whiskey as opposed to beer.
I wonder why.
It's a diet thing.
Yeah, you know, part of it, don't you think, also is all the flavored stuff? Mm-hmm. I mean, there's flavored everything.
They're really ruining the next apple whiskey. No.
But the next big thing that's coming is spiked seltzer water, which I happen to enjoy.
The new, we've had some in my house that's...
There's White Claw, but there's one locally, 3rd Street, up in Cold Spring. They make one called Hulu, I believe. It's really good.
Yes. Well, it's charged water.
With a little shot in it.
With alcohol, right?
It's 5%-ish or around
there.
You can drink them
pretty quick there. They're good on a summer. On a summer day.
Yeah. They're good in
February. Little spritzer.
They're good in February.
Well, that'd be a little conniper.
Well, that'd be good calorie-wise, wouldn't it?
They're only about 100 calories per.
America strikes me as a country that drinks beer but doesn't like beer. In other words, if you're drinking a light beer, you don't like beer.
I don't like light beers. I don't want to drink a light beer.
You're wasting your time.
Well, you do have to drink more to catch
up. About 30 of them.
To catch up to everybody else.
I do have a brother who buys about 16 cases of Bud Light at a time, so
really?
I'll pass that along to him. Well, and he goes through them.
Okay, but if you're on a patio at a restaurant or sitting on your deck, yeah. It's on a hot day. I will agree that a beer is delicious. Any kind of beer you want to drink, but a light beer?
No, I'm not.
It's like it's watered down.
Not drinking a light beer. Yeah, probably should, but I'm not. A CBS San Francisco news crew covering the Oakland teachers' strike was robbed of a camera and tripod by an armed suspect who then shot their security guard before he fled Sunday evening. The station's reporter Joe Vasquez and photographer John Anglin were gathering interviews for the strike at the Oakland Library when the suspect robbed them of their equipment. The news crew was outside their news van when a car pulled up. Two suspects got out of the car. One pulled a gun on the crew and demanded the camera. The crew surrendered the equipment, then began walking back to the van. The suspect and the security guard at that point exchanged fire. The guard was shot in the upper leg, rushed to a hospital, listed in stable condition. At 6:56 p.m., Oakland police officers engaged in a vehicle pursuit in connection with the shooting. The driver crashed the vehicle and was detained by police. Oakland Police Public Info Officer Joanna Watson confirmed the department had detained several other individuals in connection with the armed robbery and shooting, and that some of the losses, the equipment, have been recovered. Alameda County Sheriff spokesperson Ray Kelly said a 21-year-old man walked into Highland Hospital seeking treatment for several gunshot wounds. Deputies detained that man, and Oakland police arrested him in connection with the shooting.
But the passenger got it all on tape with the camera that he stole.
Well, actually, it is all on tape. Somebody taped it with their phone.
Oh, my God.
We're going to come back and visit the failed academy in the Ivy League.
Have you noticed the consolidation happening to commercial insurance agencies today? This is Patrick Ricey for the Canopy Group. The big just keep getting bigger, and you and your business continue to get passed around until you become a dreaded house account. You have been consolidated. All of this was done to you without your control. Get options and take control of your company's insurance program. Have the Canopy Group help you gain a commercial insurance strategy that makes your business more attractive to the insurance industry. The more insurance companies that we can get interested in your business, the more competitive your pricing will be. If your business is renewing in March, April, or May and is paying less than $80,000 in premium, don't accept being a house account. Get the attention you deserve with the Canopy Group. Visit thecanopygroup.com or call 800-967-3389. 800-967-3389. The Canopy Group.
And now, a man who has never had a relationship with a tree, Joe Souchere.
Thank you to Bill Miller, who provided us some libations to congratulate us on our 100th podcast milestone. Today is 105, so that was five shows ago.
Maybe we'll all go out after and celebrate.
There was a great care package delivered by Mr. Miller, wasn't there?
Bill is a good gift giver, and if he's taking requests for the next gift drop-off, well, no, I'm kidding.
Let's go to Dartmouth.
Okay.
I believe Dartmouth is in Hanover, New Hampshire.
Okay.
I'll verify that.
The kids are getting curiouser and curiouser.
Oh, boy.
They're tying themselves up in knots. Dartmouth is offering students free skiing lessons this winter.
Come on.
So long as the students are not white.
Whoa, yeah, whoa, yep. whoa.
Three people of color ski days are scheduled. Inviting self-identified students of color to ski for free.
No, I really am.
So I guess why don't you just say you're a person of color if you want to get a free skiing lesson?
Who was the gal we talked about at length that claimed she had African-American, or that she was African-American?
Yeah, I can't remember her name.
And then it turns out, no, you're not.
You're not, yeah, sorry.
According to an email promotion obtained by Campus Reform, attendees receive free ski lessons, transportation, and equipment. Okay. And it says, while the events are not advertised anywhere on the university's website, the event organizer, Dartmouth Assistant Director for Leadership and Experiential Education, Tracy Williams, Sounds like one of the cabinet headings in Carter's deal. Confirmed to Campus Reform that People of Color Ski Days are university-sponsored events and are specifically functions of the Outdoor Programs Office's People of Color Outside Group, a student group called Black Girls Are Magic, the school's athletics department, and the Dartmouth Skiway. Williams also confirmed that the free skiing would only be offered to students who are self-identified students of color, but clarified that the event itself is open to all as it is held in a public space. The organizer also expressed surprise that Campus Reform got a hold of this event information, calling it interesting and asking how Campus Reform obtained knowledge of the event. This just shows that identity politics has gotten to the point where even something as innocuous as skiing is an issue of race and oppression, and the fact that administrators feel the need to fund an event such as this exemplifies their preference for ethnic diversity over fiscal responsibility, Dartmouth student Ishwar Savarajan told Campus Reform. Let me take my shot at this.
Okay. $55,000 a year. Yes, you were correct of its location in Hanover, and their motto is "A Voice Crying Out in the Wilderness."
I'll say, what's their team name? The Dartmouth. What are they?
The
Dartmouth.
No,
they've had some good
colors. Are
team.
Green?
Yeah,
let's
the
see.
Dartmouth. I know
Dartmouth Green nickname Big Green. They do not list
Big Green.
Okay,
one of my good friends who's no longer with us went to Dartmouth. Okay. Here's my take on this.
Yep.
These white kids.
Here we go.
And these white administrators now find themselves in the business of not education. They're not in the business of education.
No, why would we waste our time on that?
$55,000 a year, you better educate.
No, you're not in the business of education in the failed academy. You're in the business of defining new victim groups every day. And in this case, these precious people somehow have concluded that the black students don't ski enough. They don't go skiing enough. They don't go outside enough.
Okay.
Well, we're here to help you.
We're going to, even though you really haven't expressed any interest, we're going to do a program here.
Although if I'm some black kid in the library and I look outside and it's 20 below, I don't want their help.
No.
Right.
I'm not going skiing.
Right.
But they've decided that there's an absence of color, apparently, on the ski slopes. And damn it, we're gonna help you. We're going to drag your ass out there, and we're going to make you ski whether you want to or not. They're tying themselves in knots, finding these false examples of inequity. That's what they're in the business of. Listen, if you're the Dartmouth Assistant Director for Leadership and Experiential Education, what do you think you have to do? What do you think your job is? You are the Dartmouth Assistant Director for Leadership and Experiential Education, Tracy Williams. What her job is to ferret out and unearth ever increasingly more sinister plots against ethnic groups. One of which apparently is that
skiing.
It's just been unfair that these kids don't ski enough.
The only black we see out there is Diamond.
Mm-hmm. They don't ski enough. Conservative YouTube comedy personality and Dartmouth alum Austin Fleckus Fletcher. Never heard of
Fleckus Fletcher?
Never heard of that. Feels similarly about the event, telling Campus Reform he was disappointed to see his alma mater continue to go off the progressive rails. It's getting to the point where an Ivy League degree won't mean much because these students aren't actually learning anything and are in no way prepared for any of the obstacles they will face in the real world, Fletcher said. Instead, they're learning how to be offended and how to create a hierarchy that rewards victimhood as opposed to competence. These kids attribute success to privilege and failure to oppression. And for that reason, they will likely join the resistance when they get out of their college bubble. Boy, that's a great point. What the left does is attribute success to privilege and failure to oppression.
Ah, how convenient, huh? How convenient.
Wait a minute. He just had a great line, but you know what's next?
Huh?
Black Diamond? Wait a minute.
It can't be the Black Diamond.
We can't have this be called a Black Diamond. You're saying Black Diamond is too challenging?
Yeah, what a diamond is.
We need to change it.
Now we know why the left wants free education, this Fleckus fellow said. They want to get as many of these young people into the anti-American indoctrination machine as possible. This attempt to fix the imperfections of this country's history will do more harm than good. Artificially propping up the oppressed at the expense of other students will lead to more inequality and division in the long run. If Dartmouth was a stock, I'd sell it. What a great point this guy makes. Look him up, Rook.
Okay.
A-U-S-T-E-N, Austin. Fletcher, F-L-E-T-C-H-E-R. That line is perfect. The kids attribute success to privilege and failure to oppression. So when you are the assistant director for leadership and experiential education, what you do when you go to work in the morning is you find more examples of oppression to account for failure, because it really isn't failure, it's oppression. And you privileged people have been going skiing, and that has to change, so we're going to offer a free program to get the kids of color out there on the, skiing.
How is Austin spelled? E-N?
A-U-S-T-E-N.
Okay.
There's just not much on him, huh? That's all right. That's okay. But okay. He apparently has a YouTube success or something. I have no idea. But isn't that something? They're so desperate to find examples of oppression that they've even got it down now to skiing.
To ski.
Oh, my God. But that's what that's why the academy is failed. They're no longer in the education business. This guy's right. These are the people that are going to graduate and work for a U.S. senator and then say that she treats them harshly because she calls them at 3 in the morning demanding to know where the email is.
Or makes them clean the comb.
Well, I don't think you should have to clean the comb. Oh. My point is, these people, these kids are not becoming fit for the world outside the college bubble.
No, they absolutely are not.
My God, they found a problem with skiing. Skiing.
This Fletcher guy looks like he's a host of a YouTube show, Fleckus Talks, featuring interviews at protest rallies.
He goes across
the political spectrum with everybody. Graduated from Dartmouth, where he's an alignment on the football team. He worked as a financial analyst at Citibank in New York City for 2 years, and then moving to L.A., he created his Fleckus talk show after the 2016 election. He might be a fun guy to talk to. Old Brookville, New York.
Yeah, thank you for that.
You know what I was doing through that entire story?
I don't.
I was watching a clip from 1965 Ski Party starring Frankie Avalon where James Brown and the Famous Flames come out and perform. So see, there have been blacks at ski.
maybe that's what they're trying to recreate. We need to bring back.
What was it called, Johnny?
Ski party.
Ski party.
Look, look how they enter. See, there's skiing.
Oh, yeah.
James skis right in. See?
Look at that.
Does he knock on the door?
Oh. They saved a guy on the slope.
That's
see?
Fantastic.
And then they do a song.
Fantastic.
Of course they do.
Ski party.
Look, here's what's happening.
Check it out.
The academy is failing because they've institutionally dedicated themselves to finding more and more examples of oppression rather than success. And they're wiping success off the map and saying that success is due only to privilege. But any failure is not due to a lack of effort or incompetence. Mm-mm. Any failure is due to a systemic oppression, a historic systemic oppression. And therefore, when we come to work at the failed academy, what we're going to do is keep coming up with new examples of why there is oppression, and the latest is skiing. The skiing. There's just not enough kids. Apparently, they want to go skiing. Mm-hmm. You know, so
you can't force them, though.
But when you go down that road, what would not be seen as an example of privilege?
Yeah. Oh, that's a can of worms.
Well, you're hearing it. You're already hearing it from the progressive left. You hear a little bit of it from occasional Cortex. You know, there should be free housing. There should be free education. There should be free transportation. There should be a guaranteed income. These are
college 529 plan.
These are the thoughts of someone who is completely brainwashed into the idea that a lack of success is due only to oppression, and that me as an enlightened liberal, I'm here to tell you. By the way, she was flying to Occasional Cortex, was flying to Washington, D.C.
Uh-huh.
And she was in economy class, and she got up and went and took a first-class seat. And when they said, "This you're not ticketed for this," she said, I'm a liberal. I'm beautiful. I'm going to Washington, D.C. I'm sitting here." Wow. Another flight attendant.
I did not hear that.
Another flight attendant came up and said, "We don't really care who you are. You don't have a ticket for first class. You're in the economy class. I'm beautiful. I'm a liberal. I'm going to Washington, D.C. Finally, they bring out the pilot. He can't get her to move either. So he goes back and tells the other pilot, and the pilot says, "Let me handle this. I'm married to a liberal. I can speak liberal." So he goes back, and he leans over, and he whispers in her ear, and she immediately gets up. "So I'm sorry," and goes back to economy class.
I didn't see this in the news.
And when he got back to the cockpit, the other pilot said, "What'd you tell her to get her?" He says, "I told her first class isn't going to Washington, D.C.
You know, when you started,
I'll be here all night. I got a second show.
That was pretty good.
Yeah. I had you for a while, didn't I?
Yeah. I didn't hear this. What the hell?
Oh, the first class isn't going to Washington,
not going
D.C.
To D.C.
Oh, shoot, okay. Then I got to get out of here.
I got to move back to economy. That's going to Washington, D.C. Yeah. All right. We'll be back in a moment.
It's the end of the world as we know it, and he feels fine.
Got one job.
Joe Soucheray.
One job.
What's that familiar?
Yeah.
Stuart, we love you, Stuart. Send us some more stuff.
Hey, by the way, speaking of one job, with this new technology that we're using for the Rookie, you're going to love this. The new technology that we're using for the podcast, we're able to kind of grab and pull things right away, including this that we'll be using for future reference. Hang on right here.
Me as an enlightened liberal.
See? There we go.
Wow. Huh? Mm-hmm. Huh? Locked in.
Barry Shockle alerts us to this ray of hope. There are 12-year-olds out there who are not glued to video games and screen time. At 12, some of us thought erector sets were very cool, and this kid built a working nuclear reactor. Frequent offsite contributor Shockle, garage logician, and proud member of the Royal Order of the 21sters. And he notes, "You build a chair box."
Chair box.
This kid built a nuclear reactor in their house.
Yeah, and don't forget that we are renovating the bathroom with a sewing machine.
That's right.
Vanity.
Jackson Oswald from Memphis, who is now 14, managed to create a working nuclear fusion reactor when he was 12. According to an interview with Jackson and his parents, Jackson spent a year and a half working on this project before he finally succeeded. "I started searching for things because that's what interests me," he said. Jackson converted his family's playroom into a nuclear laboratory. According to Fox News, his parents invested $8,000 to $10,000 on the project, which isn't terrible when you consider that Jackson will probably be eligible for at least a few scholarships at really good colleges after this. He used information. What?
Is this something that should be celebrated?
Right. Do you want a nuclear thing in your playroom?
Yeah, I don't know that.
Well, I don't think it's glowing.
But how do we know that?
He used information from the Open Source Fusor Research Consortium Forum, an online forum for amateur physicists.
Go there all the time.
And parts that he mainly bought off of eBay. Some of the parts weren't exactly what he needed, so he had to modify them. His father, who confessed to not fully understanding how the reactor functioned, praised his son's determination. Yeah, the more I read it, the more I am having my doubts.
Right. This isn't like the clock thing that was brought to D.C., that kid that made the
ding,
exposed
ding
wire clock.
Yeah.
Being a parent of someone who was driven as he was for 12 months was really impressive to see. I mean, it was an everyday grinding, everyday learning something different, everyday failing and watching him work through all of those things, Chris Oswald said. Eventually, just hours before his 13th birthday, Jackson achieved the reaction he had been hoping for. Two deuterium atoms combined. Experts from this kid's going to go straight to hell. Two experts from the research consortium verified that he succeeded. After a while, it became pretty simple to realize how it all worked together. But at the start, it was definitely figuring out one aspect of it. He may be the youngest person in the world to ever achieve such a reaction, beating out a 14-year-old who achieved a similar feat in 2008. And he realizes he's lucky to have his parents bankroll his hobby. I'm working on creating projects that kids aren't fortunate enough to have financial support, he said. Yeah, I don't know a lot of kids that are building nuclear reactors, but are they all, I mean, see, reporting isn't what it used to be. What is he doing with it?
Well, he's going to destroy us all, apparently.
What reporting isn't what it used to be. I'm glad that he does. He's not playing video games all day long. No. That's great, but what the hell are you going to do with a nuclear reactor?
I think he needs to get out a little, too.
This has got Gabe written all over it, though.
That's a little out of Gabe's league, yeah. I think. That one is. Plus, I might put the kibosh if I really found out he's trying to build for a nuclear reactor. That's it. No, that's not happening.
Do you know who's number one on the country music charts?
I saw this.
Jimmy Allen.
Yep.
The first black artist ever to launch his career with a number one single on country radio. Darius Rucker kicked off his country career with a number one in 08, but he was already famous from Hootie and the Blowfish. So what song? Do we know what song Jimmy's got out there?
Well, the one that's getting a lot of airplay on the ones on the country stations in town is the one he performed for us at the stage at the State Fair.
Okay. I apologize. I don't know what the... what the name of the song is, but congratulations, Jimmy. You know, he's an East Coast kid, too. A black country guy from Delaware. He was one of our best ever State Fair guests.
Probably
it's,
best
I think it's
shot.
Best Shot. Best it's shot, called Best yep. Shot. Mm-hmm. And I'd love to play it, but we're not allowed to.
That was so cool.
Because of various FCC rules.
And he couldn't have been nicer.
No,
he
good
was just
kid.
A great kid mm-hmm. when he came on the
he
show.
He said on Wikipedia, one of his best breaks was being on Garage Logic at the State Fair.
Does it say that there?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. All right, we're going to come back with the John Hyde Newsroom.
Stop him. He'll just make a move. Joe Soucheray.
Here, John Hyde.
Thank you, Joe. One moment, please. Sports note. Timberwolves all-star Karl-Anthony Towns, he was in the car accident last Thursday. He will be able to play again. He's now out of concussion protocol. The accident resulted in Towns missing a game for the first time in his career. He said, "This was something I'm not used to." Why are you looking at me like that, Joe?
I'm just looking at you.
Oh, okay.
I'm being polite.
Okay, I know, but
I'm paying attention.
You looked quizzical.
It was weird. It
Can
was
you
kind
look
of a
quizzical?
Weird look.
Is that, did I use that right?
It was longing.
He was involved in the accident on his way to the airport last Thursday.
Apparently, it could have been a lot worse from the accounts that I read.
He was in a Santa Fe. What's a Santa Fe?
It's a little
Hyundai mini SUV type thing.
And it was a semi that
rear-ended him.
Really?
So,
was he driving?
Been. No, he was a passenger.
He was cleared to fly after
the
accident.
Who in the hell is he hanging around with that has a Hyundai Santa Fe?
It was the team strength.
Somebody not making any money.
Right, it was the team strength coach.
Huh. He was cleared to fly and arrived in New York after the accident, where he underwent further examination, placed in the concussion protocol, ruled out for Friday's game against the Knicks, but now has been once again cleared to play.
Is the Gopher basketball team pretty much done?
Yep, they are, and Richard Pitino should be fired after that loss yesterday. What an embarrassment.
All right.
Sorry, was that your next news item?
No.
And the Wild cling to eighth place for a playoff spot.
And as we record that podcast, we are 41 minutes away from the trade deadline today.
Well, I think the boys have prevented Fenton from doing anything. They've got won three straight now.
And the kids scored the goal last night.
Donato.
Oh, my. From just across the blue line.
You know why? He shot the puck. Mm-hmm. You can't score if you don't shoot the puck.
Okay, Wayne.
In news, one more weather-related story. Lake Mille Lacs resort workers tending Monday to those stuck in fish houses after blowing and drifting snow on the lake Sunday. Joe Albert, the communications coordinator for the Minnesota DNR's Enforcement Division, said reports indicate there could be hundreds of people stranded on the lake. He said at least one DNR warden and other law enforcement officials were on the lake checking to make sure everyone had enough food, water, and heat. Albert said area resorts were taking the lead role in getting paths cleared. Chase Cromer, whose father owns Barnacles Resort and Campground, said he had been running food and water out to those stranded from 6 to 10 p.m. Sunday and resumed his efforts Monday morning. Said he had encountered less than 40 individuals, mostly on the east flat section of the lake. though he added it was frustrating some did not heed the forecast. He said most of our customers left Saturday night. They knew the weather was coming. These people stayed. They didn't use common sense. He says he has seen drifts around the lake at 3 feet high. The expected paths would be cleared enough for those stranded to get free by later Monday afternoon. He said, I guess the biggest message to take away from this is you need to be aware of the forecast and take proper precautions.
I wonder if winds like that are nature's instinctive way of preserving trees.
What do you mean?
In other words, what if the tree branches get so laden with snow that the trees could die or the branches could snap off? So maybe the wind comes along and blows the snow off the trees, and the trees are okay.
Got it. Kind of God's plan, huh?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I'm just wondering. That's all. You know, part of nature, I think.
I suppose it's, that would work.
I'm wondering what type of job it is if you're the guy that's randomly going up to fish houses in the middle of the lake.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want that job.
I wouldn't want that job
either. You in there, Bert?
Yeah, what's going on in there? You and Frank. Whoa.
The Minnesota judge.
It's cold out here, fellas.
You're not here for the ice fishing, are you?
I think we'll skip that.
You know who was
story.
Born on February 25th?
Who?
George Harrison.
Yes, I did know that, actually. I saw it this morning.
There is a trade tracker on NHL.com, but doesn't look like anything that's mind-boggling or...
Nothing hot.
Right.
South St. Paul's city-run library is not only the lone independent library in Dakota County, but also one of the few remaining in the Twin Cities. Over the years, the idea of the city library folding into the Dakota County library system would pop up from time to time. The suggestion, though, always went nowhere, mostly because of fears by some that the city would lose its charming colonial-style brick building, which opened in 1927, as well as the small-town service its staff gives. But South St. Paul and Dakota County recently rekindled the integration idea, now planning to study what it would mean for both. Last week, the South St. Paul City Council approved a Memorandum of Understanding, that's what it's called, with the county that outlines what should be studied, including whether it makes sense to remodel and add more space to the existing library or just build a new one someplace else in the city. County Board is expected to consider the document next month. At first glance, according to South St. Paul officials...
You're a resident.
It's a charming building, and it is owned by the city.
Where is it? Across from the DMV up there?
Yes, yeah. It's up on the hill.
Yeah.
At first glance, South St. Paul city officials say a merger would be a cost savings for the city, which no longer would have its annual library operating levy. Also, the cost of either upgrading the current facility or building a new one would fall on the laps of all Dakota County residents, not just South St. Paul taxpayers.
There's no reason for them to... the library is functional, and it's in a cute building. I don't know why the city owns it. I don't know what the reason is instead of Dakota County, but that building should not be torn down.
Minnesota judge says there will be no audio or video recording allowed during the trial of a former Minneapolis police officer who shot and killed Justine DeMond. Mohamed Noor is charged with murder in the July 2017 death of DeMond, who was shot after she called police to report a possible sexual assault behind her home. Several media outlets asked for permission to record the proceedings. Minnesota does not allow recording of court proceedings unless both parties consent. Noor is scheduled to appear in court Friday for a hearing on a range of issues in the case. The trial starts April 1st with jury selection.
Why is that still in place? Why don't we? I know Wisconsin allows videotaping in court. Is there a specific reason for that?
I don't have the answer.
I thought it was to protect victims.
I don't know.
Oh, okay. If somebody's okay, that would make sense.
Minnesotans are usually...
Well, she's not around anymore.
She's not around, but I suppose that's why it still stands.
That
it's just a blanket rule.
Yeah.
Minnesotans are used to making circles in the ice. Most are small and drilled, of course, for catching fish. But lately, winter circles have been getting an upgrade. Chuck Zwilling says fingers crossed as he surveys the first cuts in what he hopes will be the world's largest ice carousel.
Cool. What lake?
I don't know.
Didn't mean to throw you a tough one here.
Well, it'll come.
You know, now I must protest because Joe just handed me the story 2 minutes ago.
I never got a chance to read it.
So you had the story, yeah, and he gave it to Hyde, and then you rip him for not knowing what the name of the lake is.
That's what I did. I'm sorry. The other thing I want to know that neither of us read is how do you turn it once it's cut?
What do you do with the boat?
I just grab one of the stooges, turn them upside down, and go.
I did find the lake. It's Green Prairie Fish Lake.
Green Prairie Fish Lake.
Yes.
And he's building one hell of a big ice carousel, isn't he?
That's cool.
Zwilling first saw an ice carousel 2 winters ago on YouTube. Jani Kapleto of Finland cut a merry-go-round sized circle in the ice, viewed online by hundreds of thousands of people who looked at it and thought it was cool.
Didn't the lottery do a campaign with the ice carousel?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, which is where I get the idea. Do you turn them with an outboard motor?
About to find
out. Are you asking me?
I don't know.
Let me continue the story.
All
right. Maybe we'll find something
else. Probably one of us should have read it before the show, and that should have been me.
Yeah. We've got about 8 feet done, Chuck says. Only 1,342 to go. Chuck's vision, an ice carousel, roughly a quarter mile round, the largest ever built in the world. This, by the way, is not his first attempt. Chuck's first try at a world record last year earned him the title, but not in the way Chuck wanted. A quarter turn was all that Chuck's carousel could muster after two jerry-rigged cutting machines failed and a skid steer broke through the ice.
Oh, boy.
He said that kind of killed the whole buzz, but he said he began planning right away for 2019. On a January Saturday, hundreds of people stepped across the 9-inch gap into the Zwilling Family Ice Carousel. It's weird because I feel like that side is moving when we're really moving. Feel like the that side is that, according to 7-year-old Adeline Ellingson, as she spun slowly with her family.
Isn't this the old Donald Duck cartoon thing where you cut a circle around yourself on the ice?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Here's the answer to all the questions we have.
Here we go.
Propelled by four trolling motors.
All right.
The twirling ice carousel spins in a circle for several hours. Then winds picked it up and pushed it out of kilter. But not before Chuck had achieved his goal. The world's largest ice.
Well, that's fantastic. Itself. That's pretty neat.
How wide?
Wait a minute. The wind makes it go askew?
Yes.
Well, it probably just jammed one side of it.
Askew's
a very good
word.
See, and it couldn't turn.
Good word, Robert.
How wide does the cut have to be?
I don't know.
Did you mention that?
So this one says 9 inches.
Oh, 9 inches? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Not sure. Yeah. There you go. All right. Good. Glad we got through that.
Got her.
Yeah.
Two motors.
Yeah.
Four, Chris.
Four trolling motors.
We're listening where you, Chris.
That's it.
Former CIA Director John Brennan on Monday calling President Trump selfish after the president tore into former Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid. Brennan's a frequent critic of Trump. He took issue with the president's tweet, accusing Reid of trying to put a good spin on a failed career. Brennan writing, "You shame yourself in the office of the presidency every time you try to smear those who dedicate their lives to public service." Trump claimed in a tweet earlier Monday that Reid got thrown out of Congress, but that's not the case. The longtime Democratic Senate leader didn't seek re-election in 2016. In an interview, Reid recently said he would welcome the return of former President George W. Bush, said he doesn't have anything positive to say about President Trump. Brennan, one of Trump's harshest critics in the national security world, had his security clearance revoked by the president last year, what was widely seen as retaliation for his critical comments about President Trump. A bipartisan group of 58 former senior national security officials are issuing a statement Monday saying there's no factual basis for President Trump's proclamation of a national emergency to build the wall on the U.S.-Mexico border. The joint statement, whose signatories include former Secretary of State Madeleine Albright, former Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel, and various officials from the administrations of George W. Bush and Barack Obama, will come a day before the House is expected to vote on a resolution to block the president's February 15th declaration. Wyoming School District plans to reopen an isolated school to serve a single student entering kindergarten this year.
What?
The Laramie Boomerang reports Cozy Hollow School is about 60 miles north of Laramie. A modular classroom is already there, but it hasn't been used for almost 10 years. It'll be the second one-student school in the Albany County School District. Now, they're only a few miles apart, but connecting roads are impassable throughout much of the winter. Wyoming law requires on-site education for isolated students when it's impossible to transport them to other schools. District tried live streaming classes for isolated students, but it didn't work out well, especially for the younger children. District officials say it'll cost about $150,000 combined to educate just those two students during the next school year.
I really do not understand that. I suppose you got to. Why not just homeschool?
No, clearly. We need to spend more money on education.
I think so.
Yeah.
In this state, we don't spend enough.
I don't think we do. No.
That is unbelievably sad, though. There's nobody.
Is Billy here today? Nope, he's homesick.
Right. You can't kind of blend in the back of the class either, you know?
That means the teacher's getting about $125,000. And then $25,000 for utilities.
Well, that's for the two students. That's for two different schools.
Two different schools, 150 total?
Yep. Yeah, combined.
Yeah. Wow.
All right. Thank you, Johnny.
That's fantastic.
That's fantastic.
Isn't that nice? Isn't that nice, a one-school deal?
We have a presidential candidate that I'm going to go do research on right now, Jim Pepe.
Okay.
Is he in the cell with a comb?
He's a Republican candidate for president. He's down in Texas. He's been emailing me. He has Minnesota roots. And I'm going to do some more emailing with him right after today's podcast and arrange to perhaps talk to this fellow.
We have phones now, so it's good.
Right.
We're
all set.
You can do that.
Very set.
All right. Check it out, GarageLogic.com. All sorts of new things happening. We also want pictures of your garage wood.
We're going to throw that on social media starting today.
Yes. All over GarageLogic.com. Remember now, the podcast is one single file for your audio listening pleasure. Check it out, GarageLogic.com. And as a nice bonus, there's a brand new Table Talk with Rookie's Family. Check that out on Podcast One and Apple iTunes. See you next time.
One size rarely fits all. Rarely fits anyone. Nobody. That's why Federated Insurance customizes the insurance coverage you need for your business or industry, offering property and casualty, life and disability income insurance. Their marketing representatives are the best in the business. They get to know you, and that's why they can customize the coverage you need. Is driving a significant part of your business? They'll talk to you about auto liability. Worried about a cyber attack? You might need data compromise coverage. Your business is unique. Federated knows that. You need an insurance carrier who treats it that way. Get in touch with a Federated Insurance marketing representative to see how their second-to-none service can help your business thrive. Federated Insurance, it's their business to protect yours.